Thanks for the invitation. It's really great to be back here. I guess I should ask, what time am I supposed to stop?
We technically have the room for like an hour and a half, I think.
Okay, well, I'm not going to do that, but
yeah.
Okay. Everything I'm going to talk about is joint work with Chris Brav. And so really what I want to describe is sort of a general machine that takes a Calabi-Yau category and produces an interesting moduli space, which has a symplectic structure and some interesting functions on them, where we can use the structure of the category to compute the Poisson bracket between those functions. So there are sort of two motivating examples. There's a third one that I want to talk about at the end if I have time, but let me start with two. So I guess integrable systems is a little bit of a lie. These won't always Poisson commute. But the point is, we always understand what the bracket looks like. So the first one is an honest integrable system, which is the Hitchin system. So the way this works is that if X is a Riemann surface, here I'll think of that as an algebraic curve for this example. So everything will be within the realm of algebraic geometry. There's a moduli space of rank n Higgs bundles. Which classifies a pairs of a vector bundle of rank n and a Higgs field, which is a map from V to V tensor Kähler one forms on the Riemann surface. And the point is, well, we have this famous integrable system of Hitchin, which sends a Higgs bundle to, well, the target is this vector space, which is built out of global sections over the curve of tensor powers of Kähler differentials. And what it does is, well, let me describe it like this. It's a little bit V comma phi. This gets mapped to trace of powers of some of the traces of powers of the Higgs field. I guess probably usually this is described as coefficients of the characteristic polynomial. We're in characteristic zero, so these are the same. So importantly, this is a symplectic stack. So everything is extremely simple so far. And the non-trivial assertion here is that the corresponding, if you pull back function, that this is an integrable system. In other words, that functions on this vector space, when thought of as functions on the stack, Poisson commute. So that's kind of a non-trivial statement, because it involves computing a Poisson bracket of things. So the second motivating example also starts with the same setup with a Riemann surface. But now let me call it sigma. So the difference is now I'm going to think about topologically rather than algebraically. And rather than looking at the moduli of Higgs bundles, I can look at the character stack. So rank n local systems on sigma. Is what this classifies. So this does not admit an integrable system, but it does have an interesting class of functions whose Lie bracket, whose Poisson bracket we can understand. Namely, so this is also a symplectic stack. And, well, so Goldman defined a Lie algebra. So this is generated by homotopy classes of free loops on sigma. How does am I? All right.
Technology works.
Technology works. Fantastic. So, to draw a picture, if I have my Riemann surface, maybe here's one loop, here's another, gamma 1, gamma 2, and so the bracket is defined. It's a sum over the intersection points. So if they're in general position, you sum over the intersection point with some sign, plus or minus 1, times the loop that you get by concatenating at this point, gamma 1, gamma 2. So this is a very geometrically defined bracket. And the theorem that Goldman proved is that the map from the Sui algebra, did I give it a name? So, well, it's Goldman-Li algebra. To functions on this character stack. Which one? Given by trace of holonomy. So if you have a free loop, well, you can choose a base point. So these things are roughly. So this character variety parametrizes n-dimensional representations of the fundamental group up to conjugation. So if you pick a base point on your loop, that gives you an element of the fundamental group. You take its image, and then you take the trace of that. And because you took the trace, that didn't depend on the choice of base point. So there's a kind of an obvious function that each free loop defines. And the theorem, the non-trivial assertion, is that this is a map of Lie algebras. So I want to think of these as kind of two similar statements here, that the statement was that the functions on this vector space mapping into Higgs bundles were also a map of Lie algebras, where it just happened that functions on the base had the trivial Lie bracket. Part of what I want to do is sort of describe a unifying construction that does both of these things and more at the same time. So, and the context will be exactly non-commutative geometry. Non-commutative geometry. So let me. Hopefully these are not frightening words. So suppose C is a DG category. So. Let me just say what the relevant examples are for these two examples. So for example one, the relevant category is quasi-coherent sheaves on the cotangent bundle of your curve. And for example two, there's a certain Lie algebra. In the second example, let me just say it in as simple terms as possible, and I want to take it as representations of the fundamental group, well, assuming that genus is bigger than zero. In general, what you have to do, so in general, it's if you look at the chains on the base loop space, that forms a differential graded algebra, and the relevant category is modules over this differential graded algebra. In the case of a Riemann surface of genus bigger than zero, this is just representations of the fundamental group, because this thing only lives in degree zero and is the group ring of the fundamental group. Okay, great. So these are the kinds of things that we want to look at. So the point is that this right-hand side, whether Higgs bundles or character stack, can be generalized to the setting. So Toen and Vakie defined a moduli space of objects. In the setting, so there's some moduli space, which is a kind of a derived stack, which parameterizes. Let me put in quotes. It sort of parameterizes finite dimensional objects. So what does that mean? So if your category is something like representations of some algebra, then points of this moduli space are exactly finite dimensional representations. And we're in the derived sense. So what I mean by that is chain complexes with an action of this algebra, which are perfect. In other words, that all the cohomology, that the total cohomology is finite dimensional. So that's what it means in this kind of example. In this kind of example, here it will mean, literally in this example, it will mean quasi-coherent sheaves, which are coherent and proper and proper over the base. So it's a certain kind of finiteness condition.
Who is the base here?
Oh, so sorry, this is cotangent bundle.
X is
compact, importantly. I mean, in general, it will be, I guess I shouldn't have said that. It's just coherent sheaves with proper support. Because X itself is proper, there's a large supply of these. I mean, if you think about what a Higgs bundle is, as a sheaf on the cotangent bundle, that's exactly a sheaf with compact support, because it's exactly. Here, another way of saying it is that it has to be coherent over X. It's equivalent condition. Anyway, I don't want to get into the technicalities, but this is the there is a certain moduli space like this. And so I already said what the examples are, but let me explicate that. So let me go with these two examples. So for C is, if you take this guy, then this moduli space is, as before, the space of pairs where E is a perfect complex. So now all we did is replace vector bundle by perfect complex. And there's a Higgs field, which goes from E to E tensor omega 1. And of course, this makes sense. Not just for the case of curves. So this kind of starting with this category, it produces a version of this moduli space of Higgs bundles automatically. And well, this is not a serious thing. So the usual moduli space of Higgs bundles. So this splits up. This has infinitely many connected components. One for parameterized by the Euler characteristic of the perfect complex and the kind of the rank n that are vector bundles sit as an embed into this thing. It's an open substack of this. So it's particularly nice. What's that?
Things like instant homology spaces do.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So lots of. Yeah. That's right. So those won't be symplectic. Those will be kind of minus one shifted symplectic. So this has to do with being what's called two-dimensional Calabi-Yau. And those kinds of examples have to do with three-dimensional Calabi-Yau. So a second example, just as a slight generalization of this Goldman story, is I can start really with any topological space and take my category to be, well, this kind of derived version of representations of the fundamental group, let's say connected, just so that I can write this expression. So if I take based loop space modules over the chains on the base loop space. So this is some kind of derived version of local systems on this space. Then this moduli space is a kind of, well, perfect local systems. In particular, again, it splits up as an infinite direct sum by Euler characteristic, and the character stacks, the usual character stacks, are open substacks of these things. So it's kind of encoding all of those at the same time. Okay, so the point is, in good situations, these will also have symplectic structures. So. What's that?
Any dimension of the space.
For any dimension of the space, but the symplectic structure will be a shifted symplectic structure. And the shift will exactly depend on the dimension. So Pontev, Toen, Bezzozzi, and Vauquier defined the notion of what's called an n-shifted symplectic structure. So this roughly means it's like a usual symplectic structure, but where the symplectic form has some non-zero cohomological degree. It has degree n. So on a derived stack, so the point is, let me just say, the starting point is this theorem of Brav and Dyckerhoff, which says that suppose C is, well, let me state it correctly, and I'll largely ignore the adjective, a smooth D Calabi-Yau category. So smoothness, I don't really want to spend time saying anything about. It's a kind of a technical condition that will be satisfied in all of these examples. Then this moduli space has a 2 minus d shifted symplectic structure. So let me just right away give some examples. So if m, y is a d-dimensional, d-complex dimensional, smooth and proper. I guess just smooth, sorry. Smooth Calabi-Yau variety. So take some Calabi-Yau variety of dimension d, then the category of quasi-coherent sheaves on it is a d-Calabi-Yau category, is a smooth d-Calabi-Yau category. So DG category. So that's, in fact, that's where the name comes from for this structure on a category. That's one sort of example. And another example is that if M is a compact oriented D-dimensional manifold, Then this other category of modules over the chains on the base loop space is a smooth D Calabi-Yau category. So implicit in the assertion that I'm making is that part of, well, let's take this as a, So what this result produces in the particular cases is kind of the same symplectic structure. So in the case that, in the first case, if you take the cotangent bundle of an algebraic curve, the resulting symplectic structure will be kind of the usual symplectic structure in Higgs bundles. If you take this Riemann surface example, this will produce the usual symplectic structure on the, well, I guess a refinement. In both cases, a refinement of it. on the character world.
From you and Kevin. So is this a top, is this the statement topological strings?
This is topological strings, yes.
So the structure on the topological, on a topological field theory is fundamental, which is.
So here there's a two-dimensional topological field theory.
But this is not.
Theory. What's that?
This is the space-time theory.
So you take this worksheet theory, you add copies of R, doing model on R, and times this, and then look at the open string theory.
Yes. This is that. In some version of math, this is called string topology. So the relevant operations are these kind of Chess-Sullivan string product that you get from the field theory and various generalizations of that. I will try to, that's in fact where we're going. So these are some nice examples. So if we're trying to generalize kind of these results, so the general flavor of both of these results that I wanted to say is that there's some map. And it turns out to respect the Lie bracket. So the map is easy to define. The Lie bracket is what's much more interesting. So here, this is the answer to what should go on the right-hand side. So
there is actually E, something minus B, T minus.
What's that? There's what? Sorry. So if M is, so let me just say explicitly, an n-shifted symplectic stack, then if you take global functions on M and shifted by n, let me get the sign right. This has a Poisson bracket. So in general, functions on an n-shifted symplectic thing is what's called a Pn minus 1 algebra, which when you shift by n, you have a Lie bracket. So this is going to be the Lie algebra on the right-hand side. So the idea is to that I want to set up is to understand this Lie algebra. So this looks kind of intractable. This moduli space is huge. It has infinitely many connected components. But the point is that just from playing with the category, there are some interesting functions we can produce, which will be the analog of this trace of holonomy. So what is the relevant thing? So there's something called given a DG category, have what are called Hochschild invariants of it. So there's kind of a zoo of these. So there's something called, let me write lower star, Hochschild homology. Say a little bit about how to think of these. So from this point of view, I was advertising this as thinking of things in non-commutative geometry terms. So if you think of a category as a kind of a space, then the Hochschild homology is like forms on this space. Then there are kind of derived things from this having to do with the fact that this comes with a natural S1 action. So this induces various things. You can take invariants, you can take co-invariants, and you can take what are called Tate invariants. So you also get HC minus. It's a homotopy fixed point, so negative cyclic. So this circle action, you're supposed to think of like Durham differential. So therefore, negative cyclic homology is not like forms, but it's like closed forms. There's also cyclic homology, which is the co-invariance and periodic cyclic homology, which is what's called Tate invariance. Maybe this is the so this is the one that's like Durham homology, and cyclic homology is like the quotient of the of Durham homology by the nth stage of the Hodge filtration. That's kind of what these are. That's what this is a non-commutative analog of. But the point is, so there's a natural map. I'm starting to regret not giving a definition of things, but so for any category, for any DG category C, no additional structure, there's a map from the cyclic homology to just functions. Let me stop writing R gamma of things to just functions on this moduli space, which is kind of a version of this trace of holonomy.
It's like central charges in a sense.
It's what?
Like central charges, like central.
Yes, they're central charges, exactly. So if your category, so let's do this in an example, which is that if your category is representations of an associative algebra, then I told you this moduli space parameterizes finite dimensional representations. And this is where it's totally essential that you use finite dimensionality because, well, HC0 is the algebra modulo commutators. And this map just takes an element, you have an action, and sees how it acts, and it's a trace of the action of that element. And here is where you use the fact that the things you're parameterizing are finite dimensional. Otherwise, trace would not make sense. Yeah.
In that case, well, at least if you used perfect module instead of finite dimensional,
yep,
then it would be an isomorphism of large n limit by Lyodin-Kluge and Segan.
No, not quite. I don't. Well,
it's not an isomorphism. It becomes a symmetric algebra.
So I think what's true is what you're saying is if you look at the symmetric algebra and you look at. Sorry, I don't quite know how to say it. I mean, so this splits into infinitely many connected components.
You
group complete this, and yes, then, yeah, there, yeah, indeed, that's what.
Okay. You think that's always true somehow?
I do, yeah. Okay. Although I'm a little bit, well, I think a statement like that is always true. I would not be comfortable, but one has to be careful to formulate the correct statement, and that's not something I can do. At the moment, yeah, but absolutely, yeah. So there is this map, and so the main theorem. So I should say, in examples. So if A is an algebra, at least HC0 of A. This is A mod commutators. In the example, so for instance, so that already tells you in this example what it is, and this is exactly the thing that's generated by free loops, by free loops. So this is based loops. If you look at the group algebra of based loops and you quotient by commutators, then what you'll get is a vector space generated by free loops. Maybe that's not the easiest way to see it, but if A is, I don't know, C joined pi 1 of sigma, then HC0 of A is a kind of vector space generated by free loops. So that looks. So,
what does it mean to vector space generated by free loops?
Homotopy classes of free loops.
Free loops, you mean that as opposed to based
loops? As opposed to based loops, yes. I mean that. And so already this is good news. On the left hand side here, this now we have an interpretation. It's the cyclic homology.
Which of the two loops I do first, if it's the free loop.
Sorry.
Yes.
Sorry, I didn't hear your question from the board's moving.
The statement, I think I...
Oh, for this particular A.
Yes, I think I can.
Yes, for this particular A, you can see that it's exactly this vector. This construction produces exactly this vector space. And so now we're in good shape. So now, I don't know. Sorry, it's a little bit, maybe I shouldn't do that. In this level of generality, So the assertion, the first assertion is that if, let me write it in two points. If C is a D-Calabi-Yau category, is a smooth D-Calabi-Yau category, D-Calabi-Yau, DG category, then the cyclic homology of C as the is maybe shifted by 2 minus D. Has a natural structure of a Lie algebra, the DG Lie algebra, and the map this trace of holonomy map, if you shift degrees, So remember this moduli space has a Lie bracket of degree 2 minus d. So if you shift it by 2 minus d, the Poisson bracket gives you a Lie algebra structure on it, is a map of Lie algebras. It's naturally so this is the machine that I was referring to. So the point is, if you start with a category, you can take the cyclic homology. This has a structure of a Lie algebra, and usually that's not hard to compute. This is like a very computable thing. This produces some natural functions on the moduli space, and what we guarantee is that this natural map is exactly a map of Lie algebras. So in this particular example, this recovers Goldman's theorem. I guess for higher dimensional manifolds, this Lie algebra has a name, which is it's the Chess-Sullivan string bracket, and so in that way, it gives a kind of a string topology generalization of Goldman's theorem. That's the manifold examples.
Why this algebra is just exactly a function space?
It is not.
No.
So that's a great question. So I didn't yet explain how Hitchin fits into this. What I want to do, that's exactly what I want to do now. First of all, I want to describe, to meaningfully talk about the Hitchin system, I need to say a little bit about how this theorem is proved. Then, from the proof, I'll be able to exhibit, so the Hitchin Hamiltonians are naturally a subset of this. And it's a kind of a very naturally, you can pick it out geometrically, and from the geometry, it will be completely obvious that the Hitchin Hamiltonians commute. I don't know. I mean, in particular, this gives a, I don't know how interesting that in itself is, but it would give a purely finite dimensional proof that the Hitchin Hamiltonians commute.
Can I think about them as theorems about the dimensional unframed topological theories?
No, I don't know how to think of it that way.
Well, I think you can. I think
like
the formula, the bracket involved, like.
So let me say this. So this thing natural as you suspect naturally comes from a two-dimensional topological field theory. I'll tell you why I was hesitating. So I completely agree with that. And in fact, this has some more structure. Like this has additional the structure of what's called a gravity algebra, and that exactly is what you get the descendant operations on a two-dimensional topological quantum field theory. So this side. Also has an interpretation. Also has a field theory interpreter. Although it's kind of not a two-dimensional field theory anymore. It's like a two minus d dimensional, yes, kind of quasi-classical theory. But the main reason I'm hesitating.
Boundary conditions for the two-dimensional theory.
For this like two minus d dimensional theory.
No, it's like this. But if you wanted to view it as a target space field theory.
Yeah.
And it's some kind of higher phase space.
That's right.
I do need to see this higher dimensional theory or not.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. So, but this doesn't seem to be the right viewpoint. The reason this doesn't quite seem to be the right viewpoint is the following: is that there's a third example that if I had time I would talk about, which is Calogero-Moser, and there you need a slight generalization of this to something called relative Calabi-Yau. And the theorem is that there, the cyclic homology also has a Lie bracket. And that, as far as I can tell, doesn't have any two-dimensional topological quantum field theory interpretation.
I see.
Vlasopoulos
and Takeda?
Yes.
Yeah.
That does something similar to that.
It does. Yeah. No. So yes, that's very closely related to that, indeed.
But they use 2D TFT.
They do. Well, sort of. I mean, sorry. I guess what I meant to say is like a fully extended 2D TFT. So there's no at the. Indeed, you're right. There's a closed string 2D TFT in that picture, but there doesn't seem to be an open part. This is what I meant.
Calabi-Yau is not something that you can at the moment fit.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it fits into kind of a 1-2D TFT where you require that you have both incoming and outgoing, or like in this case, it's very tempting to try to think of these as kind of boundary conditions, but I have not succeeded in interpreting it this way. That is a very, very, very natural idea, but it doesn't seem to work, at least in an obvious way. All right. So how to prove a statement like this? So the way we prove that, the advantage and disadvantage of working in this kind of very abstract setting is that, well, it's too abstract to be able to write down formulas. In this generality, there's no hope of being able to write down explicit formulas. So that's both good news and bad news. It really constrains what you can do. And to the extent that you can prove things, you're forced to kind of work more conceptually. And so the idea is to interpret these Lie algebras in terms of the corresponding formal moduli problems. So recall.
Explain how we define a Lie algebra expression on the left-hand side, right?
I have not. In particular, I will do that now. There's going to be some calculation that the underlying vector space of the Lie algebra I name is this one, but that's a relatively easy calculation. So recall that there's a correspondence between Lie algebras and formal moduli problems, moduli or formal deformation problems. And so rather than constructing a map of Lie algebras, what we actually do is construct a map of moduli, interpret both of these as formal moduli problems, and there will be an obvious map between them after having this interpretation. So let's see, how did I want to say it? So that's the general approach. And so actually, maybe before I do that, let me, if you remind you, so there's a famous folklore theorem, starting with Gerstenhaber. In various versions, which is that deformations of a DG category are governed by Hochschild cohomology. Of C are governed kind of in the sense by the Lie algebra well, shifted by one. This is an E2 algebra. If you shift by one,
this is without Calabi-Yau condition.
This is no conditions whatsoever, yeah. So partly why I state this as a folklore theorem is because it's not true. So there are some subtleties about this that I don't want to get into. Partly is that this deformation, if you formulate naively at least what it means to deform C, it doesn't fit into what's called a formal moduli problem. But that's a resolvable, there is a precise theorem in this form that you can formulate, but let me leave it like this. Oops. I can't move both simultaneously.
But you can get the third one if you want.
It's okay. That's too much to keep track of in my head at the same time. Maybe that's the difference between mathematicians and physicists, is whether you're able to give a talk using three levels of boards or two. So the theorem that we prove is giving kind of a formal moduli interpretations of these categories. So let's C be a smooth D Calabi-Yau DG category. So one is, well, a natural question, given what I said, is to study deformations as a Calabi-Yau category. So Calabi-Yau category. So are governed by the Dealey, are governed by the Lie algebra. So you might hope maybe it's this one, but it's not. It's the negative cyclic homology shifted by 1 minus d. So notice this has a natural map into Hochschild homology shifted by 1 minus d, and the Calabi-Yau structure identifies that with Hochschild cohomology shifted by 1. Because in particular, you're supposed to get, given a Calabi-Yau deformation, you're supposed to get kind of just deformation of a category. This isn't, sorry, I apologize. I don't have it in my notes, but there's lots of very close antecedent results to this. I mean, in this level of generality. What's that?
I learned this from papers of conceiving.
Yeah, so I mean, if you, you have to be careful. I think the thing you learned from papers of Pincevich is probably in the proper case.
There's something really silly looking at
formulas. Yeah, that's right. I mean, if C is like modules over an A infinity algebra, then you can write down some formulas and get something like this. Anyway, I mean, I don't think this is, anyway, I don't want to oversell this as a meaningfully new statement. It's a refinement of well-known things. Something I think is more new, which is deformations, which is what we call exact deformations. Of C as a Calabi-Yau category are governed by well, now it's exactly this two minus d.
So does exact mean?
So I'm going to say what exact means. So exact means that the following. So you have rigidity for periodic cyclic homology, and you preserve that class. What's that? Yes. Yes, yes. Yeah, so this, I mean, I should say, even in the, like, commutative set, like, this gives a kind of a, if you're talking about, like, relative Calabi-Yau structures, this gives a stronger notion, and I think more meaningful one, of if you of what it means to have a family of Calabi-Yau characters. So the naive one would be kind of correspond to this, but this gives kind of a richer notion. So exact Calabi-Yau deformation, it means the following. It means that, so, well, now I have to say something about the definitions of things. So a Calabi-Yau structure, you can, in the smooth case, it's the same as giving a class of degree n in the negative cyclic homology. This class is supposed to satisfy some property, some non-degeneracy property. Well, I told you, you should think of, I hope this is at least heuristically, given what I said, plausible, because I told you, you should think of these as like closed forms. So giving, and then there's a map to periodic cyclic homology.
One.
What's that?
Like the operator one in a bulk.
Yes. So for instance, in the case of, in this manifold case, in this very topological case, this negative cyclic homology is, I guess I should say, what this is, it's equivariant homology of the free loop space. And this class is the image of the fundamental class in the homology of the manifold. It is exactly what, under Poincaré duality, what corresponds to one, like you said. So there's a natural map to HP. So an exact Calabi-Yau deformation is one that is a Calabi-Yau deformation keeping the class let me call this brackets theta constant. So this is the additional condition, this is the additional structure that you impose. I mean, maybe let me say it in a different way, that if you have a kind of a relative, if you have a family of Calabi-Yau categories parameterized by some ring, that's what a deformation is in this sense. Then if you look at the Calabi-Yau structure is kind of a relative negative cyclic homology class, which is a module over that ring, this thing. But if you look at periodic cyclic homology, that has an extra structure, which is the Getzler-Gauss-Munnion connection. And what you're asking for is that this relative Calabi-Yau class, its image in the periodic cyclic homology is flat with respect to the Getzler-Gauss-Munnion connection. This is the extra condition. Okay, so this is the, and I mean.
Admitting an omega deformation in a sense.
It's a what?
Like admitting an omega deformation.
Yeah.
Because, like, you can compute periods, and they will be flat under the Gaussian.
But periods don't change.
Periods, like, I mean, periods are, periods, well, I mean, some version of the period map is this. This is in this context what the period map is. And you know, like if you vary, like a non-commutative, periods has to do with if you vary C, if you deform C, this HP doesn't change, and so you're varying.
You only really find these on like non-compactments,
right? So indeed. So I said smooth. If you assumed smooth and proper, this whole discussion that I'm so you can say, why did I not assume that the usual setting for like Calabi-Yau categories is smooth and proper? Why am I not assuming that? And thank you for the question. That this would be a completely trivial theory, like everything I'm saying is completely trivial. The reason being is that this map from negative cyclic homology to functions in that case factors through locally constant functions. And the reason for that is because you have Hajj-Durham degeneration in that case, and so it factors through periodic cyclic homology. So in that case, it would just, you know, it would be very uninteresting. You'd just be studying locally constant functions. The image would just be locally constant functions. So you really need some non-compactness to get something interesting. So if you take this seriously, you can take this as the definition of this Lie algebra structure. For some value of things, you can take this as the definition of this Lie algebra. You might ask to compare it with other Lie algebra structures you know on this, and that's a reasonable question, and that's something you would need to prove, and is done. And also the assertion is that the underlying chain complex is this one. That's also a fun calculation. But now,
so there's a sort of model Kalpani, the coefficient of the Kalpani equation for this problem.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, in other words, that to specify one of these is to give a Maurer-Cartan element. It's given by Maurer-Cartan elements in this Lie algebra. Exactly. Okay. So now, what am I doing on time? I have like.
It's not compact Calabi algebra, but change the Calabi algebra, just the boundary conditions at infinity in some sense. That's a good way to say this.
Oh, sorry, what?
So if we're not compact Calabi algebra,
yeah.
How do I think about this exactly conversions?
If you start with a Calabi algebra variety and take sheaves on it, is that what you're asking?
The distinction between proper and non-proper, that's right. So, and you said this is a non-compact situation.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate a little bit? An example in actual Calabi algebra setting.
Oh.
Could there be a good example we could say?
Oh. Sorry. Oh, actual Calabi algebra meaning proper as well. Smooth and proper? Is that
no,
what
you say? Calabi algebra, which is not smooth and proper.
Smooth but not proper.
Oh, what is an example of a smooth but not proper?
Like, what's a deformation?
Like, the form conical as an example.
Oh. Well, these are, you can probably do it. Although one caveat is these are necessarily non-commutative deformations of things.
They don't have to be, though, because suppose I just think of Voltrami differential.
Yeah.
Sometimes the Voltrami differential is del of a something which is like a 2-1 polyvector field.
Uh-huh.
And that will be one of these.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Does that?
That's if I can make contact with holography, twisted holography, for example. Like if I take the deformed conifold, what it is deformation, is exact deformation.
Oh.
That would be cool if you were precisely the boundary deformations which give you the twisted holography story.
Ah, interesting.
I don't know if this helps, but these exact deformations, you can think of this as like this maneuver that you do in Kodaira-Spencer theory where you replace like a divergence free field with something that's like in the image of del.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that for like all fields, then you get the DGLA that's describing these exact deformations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand.
Thank you.
So now let me return to this Hitchin example and say, and tell you what the Hitchin Hamiltonians are from this point of view. And maybe if I have another few minutes, say something about Kalajera-Moser. So the Hitchin system. So in this case, as I already said, the relevant category is sheaves on the cotangent bundle of the algebraic curve. So this is a smooth, non-proper, two-dimensional Calabi-Yau variety. So this is a two Calabi-Yau TG category. And so the thing that slightly generalizes these Higgs moduli spaces is the moduli space of objects of this category. So now we have to think about what this HC. So see, this maps to. So this is a map of Lie algebras. At least as a vector space, this is something pretty understandable. We have that because it comes from the commutative case, we have something called the Huchel-Kostant-Rosenberg theorem, which tells us what this is. And well, from this point of view, it's actually pretty easy to see, to pick out what the Hitchin Hamiltonians are. On the other hand, from that point of view, maybe it's not so obvious how to calculate the Lie bracket. So in this particular example, I want to do something different. I want to use this kind of interpretation, that this has to do with deformations of the category. So deformation, well, how does this work? Let me remind you a little bit. So what is the Lie algebra that governs deformations? The way to think of this Lie algebra is you have, at least heuristically, maybe even more so, is that this Lie algebra is the Lie algebra of a certain group. And it's the group of automorphisms of the thing. And so if I have a group of automorphisms, its Lie algebra is the Lie algebra that exactly in this way governs deformations. And so, but the point is, if I have this category, quasi-coherent sheaves on anything has some very natural symmetries. So symmetries of this thing, quasi-coherent sheaves, well, really on anything, some symmetries are given by tensoring by line bundles. So they're relevant Lie algebra. So there's a group of line bundles, which is the Picard group. And the Lie algebra of the Picard group is, well, let me write it like this, R gamma of T star X, O shifted by, sorry, can never remember signs of things, shifted by 1. So this is the Lie algebra of the Picard group, which is and as a Lie algebra, of course, because the Picard group is obviously commutative, this is a commutative Lie algebra. So in other words, there's a natural map from this commutative Lie algebra to just the Huchel cohomology of quasi-coherent sheaves on this guy, shifted by 1. Again, the underlying map is easy to say, because if you have a category and you have any object, endomorphisms of that object map to Huchel cohomology. Always. For this particular object, that's maybe a slightly non-trivial, but from this point of view, obvious observation is that this is a map of Lie algebras where this is a trivial Lie bracket. And so an easy calculation is that this lifts to a map T star X O shifted by 1 to the cyclic homology. What's that?
Are we mapping Hamiltonians to superpotential deformations for the model?
Oh, so superpotential deformations.
I just, preference which deformations. So.
No, they're not superpotential.
No, this is tensoring by line bundles. I don't know how to. I mean, this is something purely commutative. I don't think you. I don't. You know, this is just.
It's a big field.
No, I don't think so, because tensoring is not something you're. It's not a It's not a standard operation in this business. So it's, I mean, it uses the extra structure of this category, that it's actually a symmetric monoidal category.
Yes. So, you could say, the HK1 theorem tells us what instruction cohomology is. It's polyvector fields.
That's right, yeah. So this is polyvector fields.
But where does it land? Is this just PV0?
Is what PV0?
It's the image of this map.
Oh, no, it's not. I mean, well, the degree zero, H1.
Yes.
So it's a slight it'll be a slight refinement of this map. So H1 of R gamma T star X, all shifted by one. Well, this is H0. Well, this is just H0 T star X. Oh, so this is functions on this, which is where we want it to land. This is functions on the Hitchin base. Sorry, did I get that right? Yeah, I think that's fine. Something is off.
It's off by topology, right?
What's that?
You're off by some kind of surge topology or something.
I am off by, yes, I am off by a surduality, as I should be. I'm sorry, I don't want H1 here, I want H0. Sorry, yes, because I'm on, I've already shifted. So this is H1 of T star X, oh. And this is functions on the Hitchin base. And this is by surduality. Great. So the point is this lifts to a map, and so well, anyway, and it's also relatively easy to see that this is the functions that we want. Sorry, I don't have maybe let me not do that exercise. So anyway, so this gives the answer of what these Hitchin Hamiltonians are. They're exactly the deformations in this case that are given by the infinitesimal version of which is tensoring by line bundles. That these lift to exact Kaladiou deformations, and those are the Hitchin Hamiltonians.
Sorry for the bazillion questions. But
yeah, no, it's great.
So since T star of X is symplectic.
Yep.
We can talk about, you know, just the exact deformations of that symplectic manifold in the usual sense.
Yes.
Given by the same vector space.
Yes.
Hamiltonian deformations. So is that how I should think of it? These are, I just look at the Hamiltonian deformations and view them as exactly the Kaladiou deformations.
Oh. Sorry, one second. No, you're off by a shift. Because, well, Hamiltonian deformations are H0 functions.
No, H1. It's H1.
Sorry, Hamiltonian
symmetries are H0.
Yes. I mean this is the Lie algebra of symmetries that I'm describing.
Oh, okay. I'm off by shift.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is the relevant Lie algebra of symmetries. So these are not, so H0 would be the Lie algebra of Hamiltonian
symmetries
of the original thing, and that's not commutative in general.
Yes, okay.
This is a different thing. This is a lift of the infinitesimal tensoring by line bundles of these kinds of non-commutative symmetries. And well, the kind of calculation by degrees here is that these lift to the exact Kaladiou deformations of the category. And so this is what is exactly responsible.
If they take the function, I map it to a pi vector, this is the deformation. This is the B field that is deforming.
Yeah, and the assertion is that lifts to the deformation preserving the Kaladiou structure in this strong sense. And this is kind of the conceptual explanation from this point of view. This is the conceptual explanation for the Hitchin Hamiltonians. I think I'm well past my allotted time, so I think I'll stop here, but I'm happy to.
Okay. Does the like the total hierarchy, for example, fit into this picture? Or
total hierarchy.
Like just very simple, like these are G or some A groups.
Sorry, I'm not sure offhand. That's a good question. So the other example I have in mind that I think is similar to what you're asking is this kind of easy simple case of the Kalajera-Moser, where you take the cotangent bundle of the Lie algebra and then do some Hamiltonian reduction on that.
Oh.
And then you write down an integrable system. So that fits into a kind of a slight variation of the story, where instead of Calabi-Yau structures, you look at relative Calabi-Yau structures.
Say something more about that?
Yeah. Yeah. So rather than going in full generality, let me just say specifically about that example. Well, maybe a slightly more general example where you have an arbitrary quiver. So this thing would be for the Jordan quiver. The thing I said that's the Hamiltonian reduction of the cotangent of the Lie algebra. So if I have a quiver, here's a thing I can do. Well, the standard thing is I have this doubled quiver. And I have this path algebra. So there's a natural.
Double that.
What's that? So the just double the arrows, yes. And going the other way.
Do you also have loops?
For loops, the same. Also, you double everything. You double the loops. What's that?
Do you have extra for each node? Or?
I don't add extra nodes, I just add arrows. So there's kind of two versions of this story, one due to Nakajima and one due to. I forget who. They produce the same moduli spaces. Like if you look at Nakajima's thing, then you also add extra vertices. Maybe this is what you're thinking of. There's kind of a different way of producing the same moduli space without doing that. Here it's like, you know.
Okay.
Here's an example. The one that has to do with the cotangent bundle of the Lie algebra is literally this one. And so let's say S is the set of edges. So there's a map from just S copies of the thing to this by this kind of element. So it sends one in this algebra to, so the S I think of as the projectors in this algebra, and then one it sends to this kind of non-commutative moment element. One goes to sum over EI star minus EI star EI is this guy. For every, this is the sum over all the edges. And so the observation is that this has a, so first of all, how do I say it? Sorry, this is the polynomial ring. I mean the polynomial ring in this many variables. My apologies. I am saying something wrong. What I mean is the direct sum over S of polynomial rings. Yeah, I take a one-dimensional polynomial ring for every vertex. So this is naturally one Calabi-Yau.
One or the image of T?
What's that?
The thing you want there was the image of one or the image of T?
This is...
This
is T goes to, yeah. Yes, thank you. Yes. So this, well, be each of these is just functions on affine space, one-dimensional affine space, so it's one Calabi-Yau. And the point is that this arrow, the observation, is that this has what's called a relative two-Calabi-Yau structure. So this, the way you should think of it, this kind of relative Calabi-Yau structures is it's like the inclusion of the function corresponding to the boundary of a manifold into the bulk. So this is like the boundary, this is like the bulk. So this thing behaves like a two-dimensional manifold with boundary. And so a consequence of this, kind of a relative version of the theorem I described, says the following, that cyclic homology of this guy is a Lie algebra. Now there's no shift because it's two Calabi-Yau. That this is a Lie algebra. So this at least HC0, this has a name. This is like this Ginzburg's generalization of the necklace Lie algebra. So this is the necklace Lie algebra. And now here's what we can do. So certainly a relative version of what I described says that it acts by Hamiltonian vector fields on the moduli space corresponding to this. But that's not the interesting thing. That's not these Nakajima quiver varieties. So what you can do is this follows. You have this guy. And you have another. You also have another T goes to Q direct sum of k's. You have another parameter. So this also, kind of for trivial reasons, has a relative to Calabi-Yau structure. And so you can take the pushout. This is what's called the deformed preprojective algebra. And so the upshot, so when you take a pushout of kind of relative Calabi-Yau structures, you get an absolute Calabi-Yau structure. So this guy is 2 Calabi-Yau. So the upshot is that the cyclic homology of this guy, the necklace Lie algebra, acts by Hamiltonian vector fields. On this moduli space associated to this deformed preprojective algebra. So this is a kind of an enhancement of the Nakajima quiver varieties. So this is a kind of generalizing the idea that the necklace Lie algebra acts by Hamiltonian vector fields on the Nakajima quiver variety. Kind of, in that example, in the Jordan quiver, you get exactly this kind of classical Kolesarek-Moser system. Yeah, I don't know. Does that? Sorry.
Are the Hamiltonians there?
What's that?
Are the Hamiltonians?
I mean, in this level of generality, it's sort of hard to say. In particular examples, there are some you can find. I mean, I don't know. So you can ask. I gave a kind of a very nice conceptual interpretation of the Hitchin Hamiltonians, like a geometric description. You can ask, do the Kolesarek-Moser ones have a similar kind of explanation? And unfortunately, I don't know of such a description. Would be really great to have a kind of a priori conceptual reason for why those particular ones commute. I mean, these are kind of very simple algebra, so all the calculations are not so hard. And so one can just explicitly look at it and see what's going on.
So would you say that the Hamiltonian gives rise to a Calabi-Yau category or to a relative Calabi-Yau category?
Sorry, what does?
I think it's Calabi-Yau, like the form conifold. This
time, okay.
I can try to study brains on that, like the category. Would it be a Calabi-Yau category or would it be a relative Calabi-Yau category?
What kind of?
B brains on SH2C.
B brain, brains are like objects in the category, right? I understand it. But I don't know.
Like Kukuri?
I don't know such an interpretation of relative Calabi-Yau structures. I think it's not, anyway, it doesn't seem to be this kind of thing at all, as far as I can tell.
What does boundary mean?
The typical example of, so, you know, it's like a functor of categories, but, you know, we can just talk about maps of algebras.
Yes.
So the typical example that you should have in mind is that if you have a manifold with boundary,
yes,
you take chains for the loop space of the boundary, that maps into chains for the loop space of the bulk. This, that is a prototypical example of a relative Calabi-Yau structure.
But isn't it true that might arrive in the section of the anti-canonical bundle or something? Isn't that?
Oh, yes. So, I mean, So one way of getting that, I mean, let me try to rephrase in more algebra geometric terms what you're saying, is that if I have a Fano variety, then that behaves exactly like a manifold with boundaries. So quasi-coherent sheaves on that receives a map from the anti-canonical divisor, which is Calabi-Yau, and that has a canonical relative Calabi-Yau structure. So in particular, this leads to, you know, so this is the, in this Calogero-Moser business, for instance, so this is the rational version, I think. There's also a trigonometric version, which has to do with a multiplicative one, which is also easy to interpret in this business. But this also suggests how to proceed and how to look for elliptic ones, which is just, for instance, by taking a Delpezzo surface. That would be kind of a commutative example. There are probably also some non-commutative examples of what should be kind of elliptic versions of these things.
And this would be sort of in the example with the Fano.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be sort of holomorphic bundle of quasi-coherent sheaves which go to infinity in a specific way. Is that correct?
I think you're trying to think of a kind of as a quotient or something like that. But I mean, to me, a relative structure is just two things with a map between them. So for CP1, it would be quasi-coherent sheaves on a point,
yes,
mapping to quasi-coherent sheaves on all of them. So, you know, you pick a point, there's a functor from vector spaces to quasi-coherent sheaves on P1, which is just, you know.
No, suppose I was to do a flop to take a speed.
Yes, great.
So that would seem to suggest I'm still relative to sheaves on CP1.
Yeah.
And now they will not be living on a fiber. They will perhaps go to infinity. Along the fiber.
Right. Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, you would get examples like this.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, yeah.
So I can interpret the Hochschild homology as like the factorization homology of S1.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But there are constructions of factorization homology over like higher structures, like EN algebra.
Yeah, I mean, the input here is only a category.
Right.
If you just have a category with no other structure, mm-hmm, if you want to apply factorization homology, you only restrict yourself to one-dimensional manifolds, maybe stratified ones or something.
Right.
But
I give you like a Calabi-Yau two pattern or whatever that means.
So
you can do an H1.
So I
HC.
I'm just asking about like what would the corresponding.
So I don't know. So I'm not sure I believe exactly in such a thing. There's something very special about, it seems to me, about dimension 2. And the thing that's special about dimension 2 is that the circle is the same thing as the group SO2. For a different version of this talk, I would explain why that's a relevant fact for this story. I mean, roughly speaking, it's another answer for where does the Lie algebra structure on this cyclic homology come from? The point is that there's an extra structure. In the case of a Calabi-Yau category, there's an extra structure on the Hochschild homology of the thing, which is that of a framed E2 algebra. So this is what's called the cyclic Deligne conjecture. I guess Hochschild cohomology, well, identifies with the shift of Hochschild homology that has the structure of a framed E2 algebra. And then if you have any framed E2 algebra, you take circle coinvariance, this will have a structure of a Lie algebra with appropriate shifts. But if you Anyway, if you try to prove, one way of proving the cyclic Dillion conjecture is using sort of these kinds of factorization algebra ideas that you mentioned. And there you see, so what you can do is identify what is the structure of a framed E2 algebra. And it turns out that in order for that identification to happen, it was this fact was really crucial. And that if you try to like identify in a different way what's like a framed, like what's a framed EN algebra, like what I don't think will happen is that if you have kind of a higher version of a category, then the higher version of Hochschild cohomology will not be like a framed EN algebra. This, I think, is what will fail. Anyway, exactly because you know, a higher dimensional sphere, like a SN mod SON plus one, is not a, just a point. That's the thing that's special for a circle.
I was just looking for like a trace of like a higher holonomy kind of map.
No, this already incorporates some you know, the higher cohomology classes in this trace of holonomy maps is exactly doing this kind of one version of the where you're just not integrating over a loop, but maybe a one-dimensional family of loops.
Oh.
And that's implemented by what it does on higher, not on H0, but on higher cohomology of already of this map that I described.
Isn't it like an infinity one thing? Like everything, like higher structures are just coming from loops.
Yep. Well, I mean, this guy is infinity one, and the thing you started with is infinity zero even, so maybe depending on the context.
Well, I suggest we thank Nick again and adjourn for now.
Thanks.